Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, January 18th, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast Post-Impact Wrestling Show. I'm Mike McMahon. Andrew Socek is going to join us in just a second. We're going to do things a little bit differently tonight with the Barbed Wire Massacre match still yet to air. It's actually airing right now on Twitch. Andrew and I are going to do kind of live commentary as that match airs. They are actually coming to the ring now. I just switched over to Twitch here from the end of Impact. So we're going to watch this match, kind of comment on it as it happens, and then we'll get to the rest of the show. We'll take your calls at 515-605-9345. Again, the number 515-605-9345. We'll also going to take your emails. You can email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. So Andrew and I will do all the regular stuff after we watch this match. I don't know exactly how long this is going to go. It seems like they were killing quite a bit of time on the Impact show tonight. I mean, a lot of video packages. The GWN match went really long. and I think that part of that was the fact that they took such a long time took such a big chunk out of this show. You know, originally when this match was aired, I'm sure Impact believed that Pop was going to allow them to air it on television. It even sounded like earlier this week that may have been a possibility. I know that I believe I read earlier in the week that it looked like Pop was going to allow it to air, and then for whatever reason, I don't know if that changed or didn't or whatever, but they were talking on the conference call yesterday. Sorry, I'm trying to get Andrew up here. It sounded like it was going to air here on Twitch. So I'm watching the show on Twitch, or I'm watching this match on Twitch. I was actually flipping around earlier during commercial breaks on Impact to see what they were airing. They were airing some of the old Barbed Wire Massacre matches. I saw the Abyss match from 2005. And they were airing some other content. I think there was a lockdown. I don't know what year, but there was a lockdown that was main evented with Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle in the cage. It was a four-sided ring, so it was definitely during the Hogan era. But that match was on earlier. It seems like it's just a live stream of Impact library content. But the bell's ringing. So Andrew's just jumping on here. The bell just rang. I don't know if we're synced up here. The streams are probably going to be all over the place, I would imagine, Andrew. But on my TV anyway, on my Twitch stream, the bell just rang.
Yeah, looks like they're going at it right now. We got some brawling going on.
Well, so you're a little ahead of me. I don't see any brawling yet. That was my one concern.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was my one concern with doing this live, was that we were probably going to run into a situation where the streams might not be perfectly synced up. Let's see if I can fast forward here. I'm not sure if I can.
Sure.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just reset the channel. How about that?
Oh,
see if that gives us anything. So yeah, they're kind of brawling now.
Yes.
So we'll kind of talk about this as it happens, and then we'll get to the regular part of the show in a little bit. But we'll watch this whole match here in its entirety before we go to our first break. I was not a fan of this episode overall. We'll see how this. I mean, this match could save it for me. I like the opening X Division match, and we'll get into more details later. I like the opening X Division match a lot, but the rest of the show, as it has these last couple of weeks, has left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, I'm glad they're kind of glad that this is on Twitch tonight and we can do this live because there's not a lot of positive things to talk about from tonight besides that opening X Division match. It was felt like a 2-hour long infomercial, basically.
Yeah. I'm really interested in what they're going to do here and how, as we see Ortiz, or not Santana, dive over the top rope on top of OBE, over the top barbed wire. I guess there's no ropes. I was a little taken aback earlier. I was watching the Twitch channel during commercials. I was kind of flipping over, and they were showing some of the old barbed wire massacre matches, and they were extremely bloody. And I almost wonder how far are they going to go here. How bad was this that Pop said they didn't want to air it? You know, that's the big thing with me. Because, I mean, we've seen some violence on the Impact show in the past, chair shots to the head, things that have even made me feel uncomfortable. But how bloody did this get for Pop TV to have to be like, yeah, you know what, guys? We're not showing that on our network.
Yeah, I'm curious as well how bloody this is going to get. One of them is dressed all in white, so I'm sure that's going to be an indicator. But yeah, I was watching a bit of that as well, Judas Macias and Abyss.
Yeah.
Macias is now, I believe, Mil Muertes over in Lucha Underground, so kind of interesting to see him again on TV.
I don't know. Again, I'm trying to figure out where our streams are here, but I see Homicide and Sami Callihan trying to gouge each other with forks in the ring. have you seen that yet? Or are you past that? Or
on mine, Homicide is stuck into the ropes right now, and Sami Callihan just got hit over the head with a trash can.
Okay, well, Homicide just got tossed into the ropes on mine. So
okay, I'm probably 5-6 seconds.
Yeah, I'm clearly a little ahead. Sammy's still standing here. I'm just trying to figure out how far apart we are, so that we know, you know, as we kind of go through. There's Sammy just got nailed with the trash can. So, yeah, you are a little ahead of me. If people are listening to us live, you may be where I am. You may be where Andrew is. You may be somewhere in between. But if you're not listening to us live, you can certainly go back. I'm sure this is going to be on their – I would imagine this would be on their YouTube channel. Or I don't know if – I'll be honest with you. I don't really know how Twitch works. I don't know if they can air this on demand on Twitch or if Twitch is just an ongoing stream.
I will admit not knowing much about this platform either. I mean, I've seen people watch video games being played on here, but I've never really done it myself. So this is new for me. It looks like, according to my screen, there are 9,164 people watching live right now.
Okay. As we see more barbed wire here, as Santana just tossed. Do you know which brother is which in OVE? Because I don't. The guy in the black tank top and the white pants, I think, is Dave Chris. I think Jake's the blonde hair one.
Okay. I've literally seen every match of theirs on Impact since they've debuted. And, yeah, I still cannot tell you. Either on me or them.
Well, I don't know either. Yeah.
A little bit of both.
I don't know either. This, I've got to tell you, this could be hard to watch. I mean, watching Santana get stuck in that barbed wire like that, yeah, it's stuck in his shirt and it's not his skin, but like that could easily be your skin ripping apart. I don't know how much they pay these guys to do this match, but it better have been a lot, because you'd have to pay me quite a bit of money to put myself through anything like this.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed LAX is wearing long sleeve shirts to absorb some of this.
Yeah, I noticed that too, which is smart.
I cannot imagine this feels good. Yeah.
Oh, there goes one of the Chris's, the one in all white, just went body first, chest first, into the barbed wire. Now he's being carved. Oh! Homicide is carving his ear in the inside of his mouth with a fork. So, yeah, you know what? I don't blame – I kind of gave it to Pop TV earlier with, like, come on. Like, you're on a barter deal with these guys. I mean, you can't give them a little bit of leeway and let them air their show. But you know what? We're not even really into this thing yet, and I'm already kind of going, okay, Pop, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you watch Lucha Underground or other promotions, you might see some stuff like this. But, I mean, WWE has not done anything like this in, decades?
Yeah. And admittedly, I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Lucha Underground. I never had El Rey. I you know, caught up when it first started airing. I would find ways online to watch it, and then it just kind of fell out of my routine. I believe it's all on Netflix now, or at least not all, but maybe a good portion of the early seasons are on Netflix.
Yeah, you can watch the first two seasons. Season three, I think, I'm probably 10, actually, I haven't seen like the 10 most recent episodes, but I imagine that should probably be showing up on Netflix soon. But yeah, I mean, now and then you'll see pretty bloody matches there. You know, stuff that you would see in like ECW or the Attitude Era. So it is kind of shocking to see them do something like this over on Impact, because they've definitely shied away from that over the past few years.
Yeah. Homicide just now, too. I mean, at least he had his hands up, but just probably took six or seven chair shots to the head in a row. They weren't real chair shots. Callahan and one of the Chris brothers were throwing the chairs at Homicide, and he was getting his hands up, but still, I mean, then Callahan just took a chair right over the top of the head. You know, it's these guys are adults, and it's their bodies, and they can do what they want. I do have to admit, though, I feel a little uncomfortable when you watch guys, and at least they're protected so far, but watching guys even taking protected chair shots to the head, knowing what we know now, it does make you cringe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can handle blood in wrestling. That doesn't bother me that much. But seeing an unprotected chair shot to the head, I just hate it every time. I mean, there was even a spot in that X Division opener when Desmond Xavier just jumped over the guardrail and landed on cement that I just thought was, you know, just way too dangerous for something to open up a show.
This is a full-on brawl. I mean, we just saw Homicide pour rubbing alcohol into one of the Chris brothers' cuts. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, we're only 10 minutes into this match, maybe less, and it's gone further than I kind of expected it to be. This is almost reminiscent of like a borderline, you know, combat zone match or something like that. This is not what I expected Impact to. I just didn't expect, and even with these guys, I didn't really expect Impact to go this far. Which is why I was a little taken aback when you hear things like Pop isn't going to let them air the match. You know, my initial reaction was, how bad could it be? I mean, come on,
right?
And it did kind of
interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, which is interesting because you and I were going back and forth throughout the day. Like, is this airing tonight? Where are we watching this? So it's kind of amazing they did not get that figured out. More than the day of the show, unless it was announced yesterday for sure. But I kept seeing it going back and forth all week.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little surprised too. Well, not surprised, but I wonder if maybe Anthem is going to go a little more in this direction. I mean, you can't do stuff like this all the time, but you listen to Sammy Callahan, and I think he said in one of the four or five video packages they aired trying to hype this match, Callahan said something to the effect of, you know, we'll do barbed wire, we'll do light tubes, we'll do whatever it takes. I don't want to see Impact Wrestling. I'm fine with them being a little edgier. I'm fine with even them being a little more violent. I'm not sure we need to see them, you know, putting guys through light tubes on a weekly basis. I think that's going a little too far. I don't know about you, but to me there's a fine line that you have to walk between being edgy and hardcore and just being gratuitously violent for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, if you're going to do something like this, you can only do it a couple times a year because it really just dulls it. It loses the entire effect, and then it's just kind of – you just kind of feel gross for watching.
Yeah.
At least for me, I can't watch any of that combo – a lot of that combat zone wrestling stuff. I mean, even just clips online, just can't do it.
Yeah, so, neither
you gotta be very
I.
careful with these.
Neither can I. It's ECW on steroids. I mean, they make ECW look. Think promotions like Combat Zone and those death matches with light tubes and everything else. I mean, they make ECW look like, you know, 1995 WWF. I mean, really. we should mention here this match. There's almost no barbed wire left on the ropes. Enough guys have gone through barbed wire to the point where it's almost just a completely empty. I mean, there's six sides, of course, but there's got to be, looks like at least three of the sides have the barbed wire completely down.
Looks like it, yeah. Over 10,000 people are now watching, so.
Oh, this is gross. One of the Chris brothers was tied up with the barbed wire. Ortiz went to the turnbuckle and cut the barbed wire in the corner, and then Santana literally took, I'm going to say Jake, but I could be wrong. And started to roll him up in the barbed wire. So he's literally now completely rolled up in three ropes of barbed wire. This is disgusting.
Yep. I know in past, I believe Sandman went to WCW and he was hardcore hack. I think he used fake barbed wire, and we've seen that now and then over the years. I think even Impact has used that time to time, but This is looking pretty legit from what I can tell.
I mean, the clips that they've shown, in the close-ups they've shown, he just gets driven into the corner. The close-ups they've shown of the actual barbed wire, there's at least sections of it that have to be legit because it looks pretty real. Ortiz goes for the cover and whichever Chris brother that is, it's completely wrapped up in barbed wire and was just driven through a barbed wire board, kicks out. But this is, this has gone a little further than I expected it to. You can give us a call. If you're watching this, feel free to give us a call. 515-605-9345. We'll get to calls on this week's Impact, anything Impact Wrestling, and, of course, this match right after this match goes complete. The plan is we'll go to our first break when this match is over, and then we'll come back with phone calls at 515-605-9345. Now, with no barbed wire on the ropes, Jake, Chris, and Ortiz just go off the edge of the ring and through a table at ringside. Jake, Chris is still, by the way, completely encased in barbed wire, having been rolled up in one of the sides earlier in the match. This is they're going pretty far here.
Yeah, there's a bit of blood. It's not
gore.
Too crazy on their faces yet, but you can definitely see around their arms are getting a bit of blood. Pretty much everyone so far, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, like
a lot
you
of
said,
broken tables too.
Yeah, exactly. LAX was, I think, smart to wear long sleeves, or at least what looks like some thicker elbow pads underneath their LAX t-shirts. They're both guys of LAX are, I don't see Ortiz, I just see Santana in the ring right now, but I believe both guys in LAX are also wearing jeans, which helps a little bit here. I mean, they're not wearing tights. Can you imagine wearing tights or wrestling trunks? I mean, you'd just be, forget it. You'd have your legs ripped apart. So they're smart in that regard. Sammy Callahan's also wearing jeans. The Chris brothers, I can't tell if those are white jeans or not, but both Chris brothers and Callahan have their arms almost completely exposed. So, yeah, that's what we're seeing getting ripped up. Looks like Dave Christ has a pretty nasty cut in the back of his left shoulder as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also just kind of keeping an eye on people talking on Twitch. Just it's very, very active, and overall it looks like people are loving this. I don't know what that says overall for the promotion, if they're going to do more stuff like this, but just glancing, very, very few negative comments so far. People are into this, with the 10,000 that are tuning in at the moment.
I mean, we've said it. They've got to find a way to try to be different from WWE in some way. And we talked about it, 10 minutes ago. There's a fine line between being edgier and being more violent. I think they can be more violent than WWE can. They're not marketing to kids. They could be edgier than WWE can be. But I said it earlier, and I know you agreed, I don't want to see them go too far and do something like this every week, or even once a month. I think you hit it on the head where you can do this type of thing once or twice a year when the feud calls for it. And they've built this feud up long enough, they've made it personal enough, that I think you can get away with saying, okay, this feud calls for it. But doing violence for the sake of doing violence to me is just dumb. And that's what you get, I think, a lot with like Combat Zone and those types of promotions where they're going to do a deathmatch tournament. Well, all it is just a bunch of guys actually killing each other. There's no story behind it. There's no grudge behind it. It's like there's just no point. It doesn't make any sense. And that's the stuff that's never really made sense to me. Like, if you're going to do something like this, and they played it up in the video packages earlier, I forget who was saying it, but one of the six guys here was saying in the video package, can you imagine hating someone enough that you're willing to go through or to put your body through a barbed wire match? And that, I think, is a good point. They've built up the feud as these guys just hate each other, as opposed to some of these other promotions where it's just we're going to do gratuitous violence for no reason, really.
Yes. Well, first of all, I've never seen that stick in the head.
Oh!
They just said before, I have no idea what that is.
It's like some type of point. Yeah. Santana had a handful of point sticks that have like a sharp point in the end. He put them on top of Dave Chris's head and started slamming them into his skull. They're literally sticking out the top of his head.
I have no idea what that was.
LAX wow, gets okay. the win here, by the way. Dave Chris with stakes sticking out of his skull gets superplexed off the top of a ladder through two tables by Santana. They cover him and get the win. So LAX gets the win in a, for my time here, it looks like it's a little under 20 minutes. But
yeah.
That was that was crazy.
That was, yeah, I will say I'm a little maybe relieved or surprised that they are not, like, crazy bleeding from the head. So,
yeah.
I guess that's one thing, though. That last spot, I have no idea what that's going to do to his forehead.
That almost looked like he was on the top okay. of his head, too.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was. Interesting. So, yeah, it looks like 10,500 people tuned in, which is roughly one in every 25 people watching the show tuned into Twitch. I don't know if that's they were expecting more or less, or if they're happy with that number.
And again, too, like we don't know how many people are they going to be able to show this to on demand. You know, I don't know what those numbers look like. But let's reset. We'll go to break. When we come back, we'll get to phone calls. 515-605-9345. What did you think of what we just watched on Twitch? LAX gets the win. Again, 515-605-9345. Email the show, impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew and I will be back in just a moment here on the Thursday Night Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345. We're going to go right to the phone calls. Let's go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, you're up first. Did you watch that barbed wire massacre that Andrew and I just did?
I certainly did, guys. And to answer your question, Andrew, those objects that were sticking out of Dave Chris' head were wooden cooking skewers.
Oh. That's exactly, yeah. Kebab sticks or something. Oh, man.
I guess I've never used one in my life. So I'm not much of a cook, but thank you for that. And so that was Dave, the guy, the blonde one?
They're both blonde, but the one that took the skewers to the head was Dave.
There we go. Okay, one day I'll learn my Chris brothers.
That was still pretty gross. Oh.
And you use those to put pieces of meat on with when you barbecue. So I guess LAX thought they were going to barbecue the Chris brothers here in this match tonight.
It was a Dave Christ kebab.
There we go.
I'm sure Dave Christ doesn't think he tasted that good, or at least the flesh on his head probably didn't taste that good to him by those fish.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would hope not. I got news for you. I wouldn't want to be any of those guys taking a shower after that match either. I can't imagine, with things sticking out of your head and cuts all over your body.
Yeah.
That's going to make for a rough couple days.
I just Googled him quick. I wanted to get the brothers up on my screen, and it looks like he had actually done that exact same spot in a CZW match before where they're all sticking out of his forehead.
So.
Yeah, not the first time, I guess.
Well, it looks like it still hurts no matter how many times you've done it.
Yeah.
I would imagine it doesn't feel good.
And another thing on this match, the reason why Brad Schwartz, the president of Pop, and his other executives probably did not want to air this match is because, let's remember now, Pop is owned by Les Moonves and the biggest television network in the world, that of course being CBS. And CBS, who have never broadcast wrestling before, are not used to having anything so violent on any of their networks. So as soon as they heard that anything like this was going to happen, they probably said, oh no, we can't dare have anything like that on our airwaves.
Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't blame them. Going into it, I sort of thought, you know, how bad could it possibly be? I mean, come on. Watching the match, though, I totally agree. If I'm CBS, if I'm Brad Schwartz, I agree with him. You can't air something like that, you know, on Pop TV. So yeah, no, I don't have it. After seeing it, I understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, that, like, we've talked about this before, but they used to show, like, Big Brother After Dark. So you could swear and say everything you want. But
that's a good point,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, not to say it's hypocritical, because obviously violence is a different thing than swearing, but it is kind of, you know, they're both mature things, but I guess that's where they draw the line for what they will show on their network at this point in time.
Yeah, well, the most violent thing that CBS has on any of their networks is Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
And even on that show, you might get one or two gunshots, and then that'll be it for that show. And the rest of it is like squeaky clean comedies. Well, not necessarily squeaky clean, but stuff that's aimed at the median age of current Raw demographic, which is why CBS has always had the reputation as being the old people network.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't watch a ton of other CBS programming, but I don't think on any of those other shows you'd see someone jamming kebab sticks into somebody's head.
So do they not do that on Blue Bloods?
I probably see where they were coming from. Yeah, I don't see you know, the Big Bang Theory, someone getting a kebab stick jammed into their skull. So.
I wish. I would maybe watch it then.
Okay, on to real questions now, which I gotta be honest, this week it's been a little hard to come up with questions based upon most of the questions I would use are based upon spoilers, which we don't really want to get into, because we're not going to see any of those episodes for another 2 weeks. So I had to work extra hard to come up with questions that weren't based upon any of the taping results, But with that being said, I think I've managed to come up with some. Question number one for you guys. Do you think the new administration of Scott DeMore and Don Callis will build their match structures around the X Division title match that we've seen tonight and do a crisper, more altruistic style of straight wrestling, or a more violent, we stick kebab skewers into each other's heads and rip each other's flesh off match style that we just seen in Barbed Wire Massacre 3? Or do you think we will get a combination of both?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a combination. I mean, if I were to guess, I think you're going to see things like the X Division match, which we'll get to in a bit, but I thought was the best thing on the pop show anyway tonight. And then I think that there's, you know, their main event guys probably aren't going to be able to work that style. Although with Austin Aries, I think he's closer to being able to work, you know, that X Division type style in the main event. So that'll be interesting to see where that goes. But because at the same time, I think you want to keep the X Division somewhat unique. But I think it's probably going to be a mix. And then I think, you know, they will go to this type of match every once in a while. You know, they can go back to the violent matches here and there, just because, you know, WWE doesn't do it. Ring of Honor does. You know, I was at All-Star Extravaganza a couple of years ago during the Ladder War match, the one that aired in Lowell. I was at that pay-per-view, and that was, you know, that was pretty violent. You know, they'll go there every once in a while. But I think you'll see it kind of mimic that Ring of Honor style of trying to be athletic, trying to be good storytellers, and you can kind of sprinkle in the violence when they see fit, when they think it calls for it. A feud like this, they felt called for it. You know, I don't think they're going to do it every week. But just listening to Don Callis, especially in interviews, I think he's going to try to, or he would want to try to mimic that Ring of Honor, New Japan style as best they can. I mean, I'm not sure they have the roster to mimic it perfectly, but I think they're going to want to try to move in that direction as best they can and do it with maybe better production values than Ring of Honor typically gives you on their weekly show. Andrew, what do you think there? I mean, do you think I'm on the right track where we'll kind of see a sprinkling of everything, or do you think that they might lean in one direction more than another?
I think it's definitely sprinkling, especially since Pop would not let them get away with what they tried tonight. So they certainly have limits to what they can do. And just, you know, not to go into spoilers because I haven't read any, just what Impact has released themselves.
Yeah, same here.
It makes me wonder, though, how invested in the X Division they're going to be, because the wrestlers I've seen coming in are Brian Cage and Austin Aries. And, of course, Aries isn't going to be in the X Division, at least to start. I really hope that they give more people for Desmond Xavier and Ishimori to wrestle. But I don't know. I don't know if they're coming in or not. So, basically just what you're saying. I think it's going to be a mix for now. And then they'll just go from there, I guess. I don't know if he has a long-term vision yet. They keep talking about taking baby steps. So, those first set of tapings will certainly be interesting to see what kind of have planned for the future.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Question number two for you guys. I really didn't even want to ask this question because it breaks my heart to have to ask it, but in light of all the departures that we've seen in the past week and a half, since this last set of tapings commenced. Does Impact have any talent that you would consider homegrown talent to build upon besides Joseph Park, a.k.a. Abyss? And if so, who would that even be?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I still think there are some guys, excuse me, that you could consider homegrown guys for them. I mean, I put LAX in that conversation. They're a tag team. They're not a singles wrestler, obviously, but I think LAX is in that, the tag team, Santana and Ortiz. You know, granted, Conan's not, you know, Homicide kind of is, at least, you know, in the realm of the United States, but I think you could put LAX in that conversation for sure. No one else really feel, I mean, I'm not sure who else really feels like TNA or Impact homegrown guys, but LAX were the first ones that kind of came to mind to me. Andrew, can you think of anybody else?
Yeah, for sure. LAX, far and away for me. Petey Williams, I mean, he's another one that comes to mind, but I don't think he's ever quite had it to build around in any form. He's fine. He's a good mid-card guy. Same with Sanjay Dutt. I don't know, like, would Desmond Xavier count since he hasn't been in WWE?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, he showed me a lot tonight. I came away even more impressed with him than I have been before. So I would definitely like to see them do more with him. Otherwise, yeah, that roster is pretty thin right now. When you just look at kind of their homegrown guys and outside of the El Patrons and Johnny Impacts. Otherwise, Eli Drake will probably be in the upper mix, you know, until his contract runs out, whenever that is. But yeah, it's going to be a big transition coming up here soon with all those big names leaving.
And maybe my final question, although I might come up with another one. Since Dolly Callis' background before he re-entered the wrestling business was an MBA in marketing and business management, In your opinion, what should Don Callis do to increase the word of mouth of Impact and further build up their marketing plan? For example, we know that they're going to be putting a large amount of original content up on this Twitch channel, which they announced on Tuesday that they're going to have monthly live house shows and the WrestleCon weekend special on April 6th is going to be on the Twitch channel as well. But what other strategies do you think Don should include in his marketing plan?
You know, he actually talked a little bit about this on the conference call last week. Somebody actually asked him this question, I think. And his point of view, and I don't disagree with this, is that it wouldn't be smart for them to market what they have right now, because what they have right now isn't where they want to be. His answer was kind of something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but it was something along the lines of they want to get the show and product in order before they start asking people to watch it. Because if they want to market now and bring eyeballs to the product now, but it's not the product that they want people to see yet, they don't feel like they're at a point where they're moving in the right direction, then you might get those people for a week and then lose them again. I think they want to, before I think they really start pouring money into marketing, I think you're going to see them just try to turn the show around first. And in the meantime, if there's word-of-mouth marketing that gets around, and this is kind of his answer too, if there's word-of-mouth marketing that starts to get around from people that are watching the show and they start to say a month from now, 2 months from now, hey, you know what, you got to check on Impact because Brian Cage is ripping it up and Austin Aries is doing great. I think that that's kind of what they're looking for. And then once they feel like they've got things moving in the right direction, then I think we might see them step things up from a marketing standpoint again if there's some money there to do so. But I think that's going to be their strategy for now, is try to get the product moving in the right direction so that there is a buzz, and kind of let that buzz happen organically from just people being into the product. That's the impression I got coming away from that conference call. It kind of sounds to me like that's the direction they're going to kind of go in. And, Andrew, I'll be honest with you, I kind of think that's a smart way to approach it because, you know, if they're kind of – if they're weeding through crap still and trying to, trying to get their house in order, they may not want the masses coming to check their show out yet because they might not have it where they want to be. Don Callis has used the analogy of – hiring a new coach in pro sports. I've heard him use that in multiple interviews. And, you know, if you're a sports fan and your team hires a new coach, the first year after they hire a new coach still isn't probably going to be pretty good, isn't going to be very good because the team's still probably going to stink. It takes some time to kind of get your guys in there and turn things around. So I don't think it's going to take a year or two. You know, with wrestling, it's a little different. You can, especially a roster like this, you can bring in new guys, cut guys, you can do whatever you want right away. But I think it's going to take them some time to kind of move it in the right direction. And then from a marketing standpoint, I think they're going to want to create buzz and kind of let it happen on its own. That, to me, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem like that's something they should put a lot of money into right now, doing marketing. I think they made, from a PR perspective, they did, I don't know if this was Callis or this was before him, but just the agreement of them letting wrestlers take their IPs into other promotions, I think was a big move. Just seeing that photo of Ed Nordholm and Matt Hardy shaking hands at an airport, I think did a long ways to reestablishing some goodwill because yeah, it was very weird. Cause so many people hated the owl and, you know, there was a shirt about the owl with an F word in it. But if Matt Hardy's cool with them, then a lot of people are like, well, I can't really hate them at the moment. I jotted down a couple other things too. Just continue to make nice with other promotions. Maybe see if ROH will do something with you. You know, it's not going to be on their level of with New Japan. It would be a step below probably, but maybe see if you can get some of those guys into ROH, just to reestablish them in front of those fans. And maybe just from like a YouTube standpoint, find somebody funny on the roster who has an interest, kind of like Xavier Woods with Up, Up, Down, Down, and maybe give them a show and just see if you can create content that way too.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense. Oh, and I did think of a fourth question. This is more an in-house question, but it also has to do with I noticed that none of us here at the Torch are ever represented on the Impact teleconferences. And I'm sure you guys probably may not have the time to do it, so I was thinking maybe if I ask Wade's permission off air here, that maybe I might be allowed to participate in the teleconference for you, so that we have some kind of representation.
Yeah, definitely shoot him an email. I'm actually on most of them, but it's one of those things where I have it on in the background kind of while I'm doing something else. I think, you know, I'm probably silent on more often than I'm not. I'm listening into them in case there's some type of news or something like that or some big story that comes out of it. But for the most part, it's on the background as I do something else. But, yeah, no, definitely. Shoot them an email.
Okay, that because, like I said, I'm always thinking to myself, why aren't Mike or Andrew ever on here? They go to Mike Johnson and everybody else, but they never talk to us.
Yeah,
do they not like us?
I've had a couple of times, too, I know, where I've punched in to ask a question, and for whatever reason, it wasn't picked up. Most of the times, I'll be honest with you, the ones where I have gone involved have been ones where, you know, it's Jeff Jarrett or it's Bruce Pritchard or somebody in management. And oftentimes it's me and everyone else trying to get through on those. So there has been some where I know they just haven't kind of, you know, just haven't gotten to the question, I guess, but or haven't gotten through that far down in the queue. But yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, I'll definitely shoot Wayne an email because I'd be very happy to participate if an allowance could be made for me to do that. And I think you know that I would represent this brand well if I was allowed to participate.
Absolutely, Colin. Hey, we appreciate the call.
Thank you guys very much.
Yeah,
I look forward to next week.
Sounds good. All right, you can join us at 515-605-9345. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more of your phone calls here on the PW Torch livecast.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast, 515-605-9345. Ryan in Maryland, you're up next on the livecast.
First question I have for you, is this, you think of the last time there was a match that was the main event that was deemed too violent for television and got picked off the air and got put on either the alternative form of media or they couldn't even show the match at all?
I don't remember anything like this off the top of my head. Andrew, do you?
Not that I can think of either. Something in my mind is saying this has happened before, but nothing.
Yeah,
nothing
you know, it's kind of funny.
I can't picture what it was.
I feel like it's happened before too, but I can't think of what the example was. I don't know if it was. I don't know. I feel like it has happened at some point before, Ryan, but I can't think of an instance when for sure.
Okay. My second question for you is, do you think there's a chance that Jimmy Jacobs and Congo Kong could be tag team champions a lot like Al Snow and Unabom were in Smoky Mountain where Congo does all the work and like Jimmy Jacobs is sort of like goofing around on commentary and comes in and makes the pin without doing anything?
I actually like that idea. Yeah, I think they've got to do something with the tag team division anyway because, you know, Andrew and I have talked about it for, it seems like, months now, but there's two teams. I mean, the two teams you saw beating each other up at a barbed wire match tonight are really the only two teams in the division. So I think they got to do something with the tag team division. I think that'd be a cool thing to do. It'd be different. You know, we haven't seen something like that in a while. So it's been, what, 30 years almost since that's been since that's been done, at least that I can think of. So, yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a cool idea. You know, especially Jimmy Jacobs can be the one to talk. You don't really want Congo Kong to talk at all. You know, that's the idea. So, I'd be all for that. I think that'd be real interesting. It would give the tag team division some depth too, and at least another team to feud with for these guys because right now there's really just the two. Andrew, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'd like to see it too. I think first you would have to hire some more tag teams because you probably wouldn't want them to just form and then beat OVE and LAX right away. But it would be a fun gimmick to go over on some jobber teams for a bit, maybe call up the Veterans of War for the night, the bromance, see what they're up to. I don't know. That would be fun. And it would get over Congo Kong as just a killing machine and finally give Jimmy Jacobs something to do because he's just been completely underutilized and just they have not really done much with him until now. And maybe hopefully someday they'll explain this pairing a little bit.
Okay. My final question is on the Howling Huntress that debuted. Is there a reason why she didn't use that name? Is that because that they don't want her maybe making more money off the indies and getting herself more established that way, or do you think they want to create like a new gimmick for her?
You know, I would imagine it's just they wanted to create a new gimmick, or maybe she wanted to create a new gimmick because, like Andrew was saying earlier, they're in a spot now where they're letting the wrestlers own their IPs and take IPs with them, and that would include IPs that they obviously bring into the company. So there'd be no reason, I think, to move away from what she's done in the past unless she wanted to do something different. So that would be my guess. My guess would be that maybe she wanted to do something a little bit different. But, you know, it could be that the company wanted to do something different as well. Andrew, what are your thoughts there?
I thought that as well. I mean, we've saw Ethan Page go to Chandler Park.
That's true. Yeah.
I just kind of thought maybe her coming in through the crowd, they didn't want her to be in the folk gimmick to make it just look like it was a fan at first. Cause that's kind of how they played it up. So maybe in the coming weeks, she'll go all in on the act and use the name and use the outfit. But yeah, maybe she's trying to get away from that and just seem more like a regular athlete. I'm not quite sure either.
It sort of threw me off because I thought she was to be the Huntress because Cage Match had her listed as that on Impact, but that's not what the announcers were calling her.
Yeah, I would imagine that they're going to call Anaya, I think is the name they were using, and they were just using her first name. So that's what I think. Yeah. I think they'll probably stick with. But you know what? I mean, it's not like it's a completely different name than what she's used. It's just kind of the first part of that name. So I think they could easily transition into it if it's something they wanted to do.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, Ryan, anytime. You can also give us a call and join us at 515-605-9345. Andrew, let's get through some of the show here. We'll start to run through. I mean, there wasn't a lot here to talk about, to be honest with you, because a lot of the show was filler, and then more filler. So there wasn't a ton. Then after that, there was some more filler. so there wasn't a whole lot to talk about, but let's kind of get through it segment by segment and start first with what they kicked off with. And that was Taiji Ishimori retaining the X Division title over Desmond Xavier, and I had it about 18 minutes. I thought this was one of the best one-on-one X Division matches that they've had in a long time. The company, I mean, has had in a long time. I liked almost everything about this. I thought that they slowed it down when they needed to slow it down. They were athletic and fast-paced when they needed to be athletic and fast-paced. They've told a good story here. These guys were in the finals of the Super X Cup. They've told the story of how they have mutual respect. It wasn't just a spot fest for the sake of being a spot fest. It made sense, but it was athletic. I really liked everything about this match. I thought this not only was it a really good opener, but I thought this was the type of match that, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, this is the type of performance that can take Desmond Xavier from one level and move him up, move him up to the next level. In terms of the X Division, you know, he's not in the main event of the show, but in terms of the X Division, he's totally legitimate against anybody in that division right now and would certainly be, I think, not only worthy of being a title contender, but I think ultimately would be worthy of carrying the X Division belt. He's elevated himself a lot in the last 6 months or since that Super X Cup, including that Super X Cup, because he disappeared after winning it. But this was just another example, I think, of him raising his stock big time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would say this is one of my favorite Impact matches, probably in months.
Yeah.
just in general. And yeah, I love that spot where he was just slapping Ishimori with both of his hands, telling him to stay down. He really showed me, I've always liked him, but to me tonight, he kind of, his stock rose a whole nother level here. And I was hoping he was going to head out with the win. But maybe, you know, maybe it's better to do a few more rematches and keep the chase going. I, as much as I like this match, I was just really starting to get into it when it ended. And I was kind of just wishing, I think it would be cool if Impact just took something like this and gave two guys like 40 minutes to open the show, because everything that came after.
I was hoping
was
the same thing.
So, yeah. Yeah. I was, I looked at the clock and it was, you know, just about 20 minutes, past the hour, and I'm like, oh God, I hope this goes another 10 minutes or so, because this is really getting good. And I think that would be something to create a lot more buzz than, you know, Chandler Park fighting Congo Kong or 20 different video packages. So I don't know, maybe something they could look at in the future, but overall, easily the highlight of the show.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And, you know, we talk a lot about Desmond Xavier, and you and I both have, but Ishimori, it continues to impress to the point where, you know what, I mean, I assume that this Pro Wrestling NOAH relationship is going to continue and going to continue to evolve and move forward. They've talked about, you know, Don Callis and Scott D'Amore have talked about mending fences with New Japan. Even if that happens, I hope Ishimori's a guy that can stick around, because he's a good fit for that X division. I think he's come in, and we've talked about Desmond Xavier a lot, but I feel like Ishimori's flying under the radar with the type of performances he's putting in as well.
I think so too. I mean, with those two guys and Trevor Lee, like, you have really solid three guys anchoring the division, like, that are basically more exciting than anybody in WWE right now, which is, you know, the 205 Live is being anchored by Enzo Amore. So, I mean, with very minimal effort, Impact is the more, interesting show, I guess, for that kind of wrestling at the moment, even though it's still far, 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 from where it should be. So hopefully Catless and D'Amore bring in a few more guys. But yeah, I mean, things are kind of going okay, despite how lackluster the booking has been.
The only thing I didn't like about this match, and I feel like this is a weekly complaint between the two of us, but I thought the commentary was bad. Again, you know, as exciting as this match was at times, I just found the commentary to be robotic and lifeless. You know, the one that really where it stood out the most to me was where was it? I had it noted here. Yeah, there it is. Here, I was looking through my notes. I couldn't find it. So Xavier hits a final flash, and I thought that was the most believable near fall, in not only in this match, but probably on Impact as a whole in a while. There were people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. I thought that, okay, Xavier hits the finish there. This is the finish. It's his finisher. This is the finish of the match. And as soon as he hit it, as much as I thought in that brief moment, this is the finish of the match, he's going to win the belt, you kind of knew it wasn't going to happen because of how unexcited Jeremy Borash was about it. You know, here's a guy who has never won the X Division title before. He hits his finish on Ishimori, and Borash was just like, final flash. And that was it. Like, he just said the name of the move like he was reading it off of a piece of paper. And it just, the commentary, I thought, wasn't very good. But, you know, that's no fault of the wrestlers, obviously. They did. They still put in a great performance, despite the fact that the commentary was, I wouldn't even say a little lackluster, I'd say really lackluster.
Yeah, I noted that exact moment, too. They're just doing such a disservice to the wrestlers. I mean, you know, they're literally putting their bodies on the line here. And I just, like, I'm at the point, like, I don't care. If you know, you've been there for 6 days in a row, I get it. You're not as excited as day one. But when you see, like, a fantastic match right in front of you and you can't work up that enthusiasm, just don't do it anymore. I mean, I'm sure it pays relatively well, but it's hurting other people's careers with the way they announce. I listened to Killing the Town today, and Don Callis was talking about things that fans had told him they wanted changed. And number one, I believe, was get rid of the grand championship. And number two was get rid of the six-sided ring. And to me, far, far, far and away, beyond those two, is get rid of the announcing team. I will take the grand championship for another 5 years if they can get rid of these guys.
Yeah.
And just put in two guys that just aren't completely terrible at their jobs. And I know we've talked about it for a year straight, pretty much since we've gone on the air with this, but it is just so amazingly awful. I cannot think of another announced team that has been worse than these guys on a national stage. And it just, it annoys me very much on a weekly basis. Like the show would be better at times if you just turned off the sound and watched the wrestling, basically.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And by the way, I looked this up earlier today. We're not going to do, we should have done something special for this, but we didn't. Our 1 year anniversary of the PW Torch Thursday live cast here after Impact is tomorrow. We debuted on January 19th, 2017, and we're here January 18th, 2018. So our 1 year, our official 1 year anniversary in the show is tomorrow. So we have made it a year. I know people were counting us out. all the doubters out there, but no, we made it the whole year, and we continue to watch this show every week, sometimes questioning why, but you know what though, it's matches like this Xavier Ishimori match that they just pull you right back in with. Like, if I can watch 2 hours of stuff like that, I'm a pretty happy guy.
Yes. Well, first of all, happy anniversary.
Yes.
yeah, like you said, I mean, I'm a very, probably a negative wrestling fan, but it is those moments that, like that, where I'm like, God, I would just kick myself when I don't see it. I mean, I missed the Nexus, invading Raw live, and I've kicked myself ever since for missing out on that moment. So, I'm in deep. No matter how much I complain, I still like it. And very cool that we've been here a year. I hadn't even realized that yet.
I only realized it because I was looking up an email earlier today. Are we having issues with Skype on the show? So if you're listening to the show, not to get too inside and bore you on how podcasts are put together, but if you've listened to the show the last couple of weeks, the audio quality hasn't been what it was for months prior to that. And it's because there was an issue between Blog Talk Radio and Skype. And I was trying to figure out how to fix it, and I was looking up old emails, and I found the email from Wade where he was running through, okay, here's a list of callers that call, and just kind of a format for what he wanted. So it was the 19th was show number one.
Hmm.
All right, so after this match, they went to a whole bunch of filler. They went to about 30 or 40 minutes of straight filler between video packages, and they aired a flashback match between Aaron Rex and Eddie Edwards for the grand championship at Bound for Glory in 2016. One thing, and again, this had nothing to really do with what they were airing at the time, and I agree with Pop for not letting them air that barbed wire match. I do think it was a little too violent for them to air on TV. But it's interesting to me that we know that Impact's relationship with Pop is a barter deal. That came out in the lawsuits between Dixie Carter, I think it was between Dixie Carter and Billy Corgan, that the rights, there are no rights fees. They're not getting paid rights fees from Pop TV. You think of the money that WWE gets for Raw and SmackDown from NBC Universal. That's not the case with Impact. They don't get a rights fee. It's a barter deal, so you end up with X amount. I don't know exactly what the number is, but I think for 1 hour of television, there's about 16 minutes of commercial time. So for 2 hours, there's 32 minutes of commercial time. The way the barter system typically works, Pop TV gets 16 minutes to sell. Impact gets 16 minutes to sell. So they're not paying them any money, and yet Impact still goes out of its way to promote all these other things on Pop TV. And I think that's great. You want to be a good television partner or whatever. The reason why I noted it at the time was of all the filler was there because Pop declined them to show the match. And again, in retrospect now, in hindsight, I agree with them for not airing the match on Pop. But at the time, I'm sitting here, 8:45 tonight as I watch the show going, you know what? Pop's going to tell you what you can and can't air. And yeah, that's their network. It's their right. But they're not paying you any rights fees. And Impact's been a pretty good soldier. They've promoted these dumb shows like the Swole Brothers and everything else that Pop has asked them to promote. They promote, you know, whatever stupid 1993 movie is coming up after Impact on a weekly basis. They do all this stuff to help out Pop, and then I'm sitting here going, you know, Pop has to give them a hard time about airing a match, really? And again, that's in retrospect, I understand the decision, but, you know, I kind of feel like Impact doesn't need to be such good neighbors here either. You know, they're not giving them any money. They're not, they're kind of clamping down on what they can and can't show. And meanwhile, Impact's going and you know, basically taking on whatever promotional consideration Pop wants to pay him, wants to ask them to do. The only caveat to that is, and the Swole brothers were in the ring and, you know, at the television tapings, is if Pop paid Impact to promote that show and have those two idiots on TV, they need money, so okay, I get it. You know, it's a they need revenue. So if Pop said, "Hey, we'll pay you X amount of dollars to have you these big, you know, jacked up steroid guys come and sit and watch the show and push Chris Adonis or whatever that thing was," okay. But if Pop or if Impact isn't getting paid any money from that from Pop, if it's just, "Hey, you're on our network, can you promote these guys for us?" My answer, if I'm, you know, Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, is no. No, you know, we're not going to do it. Yeah, you know what? We're your highest rated show. Give us some money. You know, pay us something for these. Even though, you know, they're only at 200,000 or 300,000 viewers, they're still the highest. They're the highest viewership on Pop TV. So if you want to use, if Pop wants to use Impact as a vehicle to promote other things, then they should have to pay something for that. I'm not saying they got to pay, you know, a $150 million rights fee like you would for Raw. Or I don't even know what Raw's rights fee is off the top of my head. But I'm not talking about millions of dollars. But if Pop wants Impact to use their audience as a way to promote, you know, their dumb original content like the Swole Brothers, then pay them. Or if you're Impact, I would just say no. Like, you don't have to play nice anymore.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
It is so baffling. I mean, Impact, you know, at one time they used to do like a third of the ratings that Raw or SmackDown was doing, and now they're doing about a 10th. Obviously, WWE is more established, have a bigger platform, social media presence, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously, they're not going to get 1/10 of that right fee. They're not going to get $15 million, whatever it is. But it is kind of crazy they can't get like $1 million for supplying 104 hours of original content throughout the year. And it, like you said, it's their highest rated show, and yet they can't get anything out of it. It's just weird that I don't know if wrestling as a whole still has that stigma. But yeah, I don't know why they need to keep going out of their way then to put over all those stupid shows. And like you said, movies of the week. I can't even remember whatever they were showing tonight, but it just made me laugh because it looked so bad. Yeah, so I mean, I know Jeff Jarrett was trying to land a new home when he was there. The plan was to go back to Spike/Paramount. That did not go through, which was a big loss. But hopefully, yeah, I mean, Callis and D'Amore can get this back on track somewhat so they can go somewhere and make something again. Because, yeah, I mean, this huge investment for Anthem has certainly not paid off to this point. And that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it just they need to find a new home. They're not ever going to grow on this network, and at some point, I think they're going to need someone like Spike did for them in 2005 or whenever it was that they ended up on Spike. They need someone to come along and take a chance on them again. You know, because that's really what Spike did. Spike was taking a chance at the time, and it worked out for a number of years, and they kind of need that. that again. I just don't know who that network is. All right. After that, they aired some stuff, some more video packages on Allie and Laurel Van Ness. Allie talked about everything that Laurel did to her when she was with Maria. I guess Allie conveniently left out the fact that she stole Laurel Van Ness's husband at the altar.
I also noted during that segment, the voiceover used in the Allie promo, they then aired that exact same promo in its entirety right after that. So they just took the audio from that promo and aired it over the voiceover. So we heard the exact same dialogue.
Oh, that's a good
back
point.
To back.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even catch that, but you're right.
Very amateurish.
We'll get to some more amateurish stuff in a minute here. Kong beat Chandler Park in about 2 minutes. I thought this was a fine squash match for what it was. Good to get Kongo Kong a win. The only thing I thought that was kind of silly here was after the match was over, Joseph Park ends up in the ring. He's checking on his cousin Chandler Park, and he starts throwing up the X sign, you know, that referees throw up when someone's legitimately hurt. And it just reminded me of Vince Russo WCW garbage, where, you know, everything's a shoot, bro. And you'd hear Tony Giovanni talking about how guys were going off script. And back in that era, anyone who – the people you were appealing to by saying that you were going off script were smart enough to know that you weren't actually going off script. So it was kind of reminded me of the same thing here, where anyone watching who knows what that X sign means also knows that if they're showing it on camera like that and zooming in on Joseph Park doing it, it means that Chandler Park isn't really hurt. So I thought that was kind of just silly. You know, you're playing to the smart fan who knows better by what the, you know, it just, that didn't make a whole lot of sense. But overall, you know, good to see Kongo Kong on TV again. You know, they also talked, which I thought was funny, about how Jimmy Jacobs has brought Kongo Kong to Impact Wrestling. So I guess we're supposed to forget about the fact that he was here before, because he was here long before Jimmy Jacobs was. I mean, he had a love affair with Laurel Van Ness, for all we know.
Right, yeah. I know they taped this before it happened, but the whole X thing, I think, was like too soon, in the sense that, you know, that footage with Paige,
when
she got kicked in the back. I think they did the X during that. And, you know, Joseph Park is just doing that big, dumb, over-the-top facial expression. So that, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if anybody else thought of that, but it kind of popped into my mind. The thing with me when this Chandler Park character is, I don't get why you would take a talented wrestler and portray them to be a crappy wrestler. Why not just hire a crappy wrestler to play a crappy wrestler?
That's an excellent
point. I don't
point.
Get the gimmick.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, I'm already very much over it. Like, the fact that he doesn't know how to throw a punch into the stomach, I don't know. Sorry. We can move on.
No, I mean, and it's not what they did with EC3. I mean, EC3 came in as Dixie Carter's nephew, but he was never portrayed as an idiot.
Right. Yes, exactly.
I don't get it either. So, all right, where do they go from there as I lose my place? Oh, we talked about Amateur Hour. Well, we went to the all Amateur Hour all time. I mean, they keep trying to outdo themselves with how crappy they can make some of these matches look. Eli Drake, Johnny Impact, Alberto El Patron. This match was filmed at Border City Wrestling. It was a global title match. And this, I feel like every single one of these, we say every week, oh, it's a new low, oh, it's a new low, oh, it's a new low. This might be, again, a new low. They aired promos before the match with, I'm trying to be nice here, but the guy doing the interviews doesn't even have a shirt buttoned, let alone, you know, wearing a tie or something. He's holding a microphone with no mic, whatever the mic jackets or whatever it's called with the logo on it. That's just looks like a mic that I'm using right now that you plug into a computer. It's dimly lit. The backdrop is like a cinder block wall. It looked like they forgot to turn the lights on when El Patron was doing his pre-match promo because you could barely see him. And then you get to the ring, Then you get to the ring for the match. It's in a dingy, dark little... It looks like it's in a nightclub almost. The ropes... I've never seen looser wrestling ropes in my... They were sagging! I mean, at one point...
No, I've never, ever seen ropes like that. And I've been to dozens of indie shows where 50 people have shown up. I don't know what that was.
Happening there? Johnny Impact at one point went to go whip Eli Drake into the ropes, and Drake just kind of ran up to them and stopped. Honestly, I don't think he could have hit the ropes. If he hit the ropes, he would have fallen out of the ring. Because there was so much slack in the ropes, he would have gone beyond the apron. He wouldn't have ended up on the ground. He would have fallen between the ropes and the ring apron and ended up on the floor. I've never seen anything like that before. It looked terrible.
No. It looked awful. I would say the lighting was slightly better than that gym match they had.
It was.
This was very embarrassing. And I just wondered who paid for this. And why, like, is Anthem helping bring those guys over? Because otherwise, I'm like, man, this is just off the top of my head, total guess. Like, El Patron's at least making a couple grand per indie appearance. Same with Johnny Impact. Eli Drake, probably half of what they are making. So let's say $5,000. There is no way they sold $5,000 in tickets for that little indie show. So Anthem is paying people to go to a crappy indie show and then air it on national TV. That's got to end. I don't know if that was the more thing, but man, is that awful.
I mean, here's the thing that doesn't make any sense. We saw last week they were cutting a promo about this match that had not happened yet. So they knew they were going to go do – they're cutting a promo in Ottawa in the building that they have lit and looks decent, right? It looked good. The building in Ottawa looked good. So they've got this building where the crowd's lit well, the ring's lit well, you got your video boards, everything looks like a professional organization. You're talking about this match, which has not yet happened. Why on earth would you not just tape that match in your own building? Where you actually have lights, where you actually have, you know, a ring entrance and all this other stuff. You have a ring with ropes, number one. I mean, yeah, there might be six sides of them, but at least there's ropes. I mean, I just don't understand what was achieved by putting that match on at Border City Wrestling? To promote Border City Wrestling? Like, who cares?
Right.
Why is that a top priority? I get Scott D'Amore owns Border City Wrestling. I get it. But you know what? Scott D'Amore is also in charge of Impact. And at some point, his side project needs to get put on the side. This is not about – this looked terrible. And it's like they continue to do it week after week. The matches they aired from Pro Wrestling NOAH, fine. I'm fine with that. That was different. It looked good. It was in a building where there were actually people there. The matches they aired from, was it the Crash, I think it was, or from AAA? For AAA, it looked great because they're in a dome with 30,000 people.
Yeah.
The matches from the Crash, it was in a pretty unique building. It was like a theater in the round, but there were actually people there. There were more people there than were in the Impact Zone. These matches from WrestlePro and from Border City Wrestling, they're indie companies. So it looks like you're airing an indie match that someone shot on their phone on your national television show. I mean, you get a world title. You're supposed to be you're talking about the prestige of your global championship and your world title, and everyone is fighting over this prize that everybody wants, and it's defended in a high school gym in front of 50 people? Like, it's so prestigious that no one comes to see it defended. It just – it defines it down so much. They make – it's like they're going out of their way to make themselves look minor league. And I get it. Look, they are minor league. Compared to WWE, right, they are minor league. We all know that. But I don't think you need to go out and announce to the world, hey, we're much worse than these people are. Like, at least pretend. I don't think you disagree, but this was terrible. And it's like every time it's a WrestlePro match or a Border City match or something from an indie company, no matter how much they try to dress it up, it looks like a match that they taped at an indie show because that's what it is. And all it does is show that your talent that we're supposed to believe are big stars are not a big enough draw to fill up a high school gym. You know, the title match that they aired a couple of weeks ago where there's empty bleachers behind them. I mean, what's the message there? Your big stars are such big stars that they can't fill up, you know, a high school gym? because that's the message it comes across. It just it doesn't do any good at all. And like you've said it a couple times, but who thinks that is okay? Like, who ultimately, where does the buck stop, and who says this is a good idea? We should air this. Just like the one from a couple of weeks ago, they should look at this match and be like, no, we'll fill it with anything else, but we cannot air that. And this is another one that they just there's no way that they should have aired that. Someone needs to be smart enough to look at that tape and go, there's no possible way we can air that. The ropes aren't even connected to the ring. I mean, it looks like a 15-year-old put the ring together. And just never tightened the rope. I've never seen ropes like that.
No,
I don't know. Yeah, what. I just don't get it.
Yeah. If Damore thinks this is a good idea, that's just horrible for the future of this company. On my laptop, I had the Twitch stream going while watching this show, just because I'd never really looked at Twitch before, and they were showing like a Samoa Joe versus Christian match, and there was people in the crowd. I'm like, I would much rather be watching this than this current title match in a, I don't know, a bar or whatever it was. It doesn't even have guardrails. Yeah, it's just so sad how far this company has fallen in that sense. It's like the AWA when people were not coming to the shows and they would just record in these little like empty arenas because that, you know, the glory days were long, long gone and nobody was watching. It feels like that to me. Hopefully, I mean, it sounds like, you know, they still have some money, but whatever money they have should not be spent to doing anything like this ever again.
Yeah, and I almost get it if you're like, okay, there's no other choice. We're short on content. We need to air something. We have these guys that are going to be at an indie show. Let's record it and we'll air it because we need content. Like, if you're stuck, that's fine. But this was clearly planned because they were talking about it in Ottawa. They were cutting the promos last week's show, which were taped in Ottawa before this match took place. So this was planned. All of this was scheduled to air this way. You had those three guys in your own building. You know, that's the thing that I think is inexcusable here. You had the three guys in your own building. Tape the match in your own building where you actually have lights. Like, what was accomplished? So, like, who got something out of that? Border City Wrestling got, you know, in front of 250,000 people on national TV, on Pop TV, which they otherwise wouldn't have been in front of. So the only people that benefited are Border City Wrestling. So even if you have – and that's the other thing. Even if you have a talent exchange with Border City Wrestling or you know, WrestlePro or any of the smaller indie companies like that, what's the benefit of partnering with these companies? They're independent promotions.
Right.
Like, guess what? If Border City Wrestling was owned by Joe Smith and not Scott D'Amore and your Impact and you want to use somebody from Border City Wrestling, you don't need to have a talent exchange. Just go pay them. They're independent contractors. Mm-hmm. No one's under an exclusive contract with Border City Wrestling. If there's somebody from there that you really want, say, hey, I'll pay you X amount. Do you want to come down and be on our TV? And then you don't have to air this type of garbage on your television show. Partner with Pro Wrestling Noah, partner with AAA, partner with Crash, these promotions from other countries where you can air matches in bigger arenas where there's actually people there, great. Partnering with an indie promotion, calling yourself a partner with an indie promotion, all that does is just kind of define you as being an indie promotion. I just don't see what the advantage of it is at all. It seems like companies like WrestlePro and and Border City Wrestling, it's a one-way street. They're getting all the benefit. They're getting this exposure that they wouldn't have otherwise had, and they're getting talent that they may not have otherwise had access to. You know, without a talent-sharing agreement with Impact, I don't think Eli Drake, El Patron, or Johnny Impact are wrestling a three-way at Border City Wrestling. So they're selling more tickets because of the added talent, theoretically. They're getting exposure that they wouldn't have had otherwise. And what exactly is Impact getting? Access to wrestlers? Well, no, they have access to them anyway. All those guys are independent contractors. Are they getting more exposure? No. Impact is getting no benefit from this other than this isn't a benefit. This is a something that I think is hindering them. The fact that what Impact gets out of this is airing badly lit matches in front of smaller crowds that look terrible while all of the partners get the benefits of added exposure. I just don't understand why anyone thinks that this is a good idea. I don't get it.
I 100% agree. And the thing is, they're getting exposure, border sitting, but it's not even good exposure because it looks like crap. Like
exactly.
If they were in my area, I mean, if they're in my town, okay, maybe I'll go on like a Friday night, but I'm not like going to go drive an hour or two out of my way to go see them because of how awful it looks. I mean, yeah, if I've had a couple drinks and they're downtown, sure, why not? I'll go to the bar they're going to be wrestling at. But no, I'm not. Everything about it looked awful. It was embarrassing. And yeah, I'm so confused on a weekly basis how this makes air. If I were them, I would say, let's not devalue our championship. Yes, we're going to lose some viewers tonight, but put in an old Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles match for 20 minutes.
Totally. So this is a true story.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound ridiculous, but this is a true story. I went to an indie show in my area last summer. It was probably around June or July, where the ropes in the ring were literally garden hose. It was like red or maroon color garden hose that you would buy at like Home Depot. Those ropes looked better than the ropes on that Border City Wrestling ring. They were at least tight.
Yes.
Guys could at least bounce off of them. I don't know what was going on. Do you have any theory about what was going on with those ropes? It looked like picture if you're watching like Mad TV or Saturday Night Live and they do a spoof on pro wrestling and they kind of do like this mock-up ring. Like that's what it looked like. They weren't even the ropes were not even in a straight line. They were sagging.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that before.
It was like Bailey's wacky wavy inflatable things where they just had their own movement to them. And I could focus on nothing except for that because I'd never seen ring ropes move that way.
They moved with everything too because of the fact that they were so loose.
Yeah.
El Patron's walking around the ring and the ropes are just flailing about. I mean, it was insane. I could yell about this all night, but I don't want to bore people or go insane myself. So we'll finish up here because there really wasn't much else on the show. They went to a lot of filler after that. And then we're actually getting to the end of this thing here. We're almost 90 minutes in. We got to get over to the VIP after show. But the last match on the card was Rosemary. She beat Casey Spinelli in 3 minutes. And then we talked about it with Ryan in Maryland. Hanaya came out after that, attacked Rosemary, beat her up all over the place, in the ring, at ringside, dropped her on the steps. That's what eventually led to officials coming out and breaking it up, and they separated them. But okay match here, I thought. You know, Rosemary needed a win. She's been kind of put in the back burner with Laura Van Ness and Allie over the course of the last couple of weeks, so good to see her get a win. Casey Spinelli is someone they've used quite a bit, and ironically, after all my ranting, I think that she is kind of one of these people they've brought in from Border City Wrestling. But again, guess what? They didn't need to be partnered with Border City Wrestling if they wanted Casey Spinelli. They could just, you know, hire her. I thought that she's looked good. Josh Matthews, I think, said something to the effect of, hey, I think we might see her challenge for the Knockouts title at some time in 2018. I think they could get her there. You know, she's someone that I think they could add to the roster. I think she's been pretty good in the matches she's had so far. But ultimately, she kind of her role here was to get squashed by Rosemary to get Rosemary a win and set up for that post match attack. And overall, I thought it came off pretty well. I thought Rosemary's promo before she was attacked was pretty good as well.
Yeah, pretty much everything you just said. I thought Spinelli's match with Laurel Van Ness was a bit of a dud last week. I thought this was definitely a better effort. Overall, she's growing on me a little bit. She's got good facial expressions. Just has like a distinct way of moving about the ring. I think they're definitely going to need more women for her to beat to climb up the ladder. And I think that should be near
90 seconds
to do list is to bring in more than just like the half a dozen women that we see all the time.
All right, well, that will do it for the episode of Impact Wrestling tonight. Again, not much here. Three matches, four if you include Barbed Wire Massacre. We talked about that as it aired. But that's our review of this week's show. We got to get out of here. We got to get over to the VIP after show, and Wade Keller is going to tell you a little bit more about PW Torch VIP in just a second. But for VIP members, Andrew and I are going to talk.
60 seconds.
We're going to hit on some more topics, kind of WWE related. We're going to talk Paige and her injury and coming, or her career, at least in WWE, coming to an end. And is the style, even in WWE, something that needs to be calmed down? So that people can maybe last a little bit longer. I mean, this is kind of a history of some injuries ending careers early. We'll also talk the prospects of EC3 and WWE. We'll talk the prospects of some of the new Performance Center signings, Ricochet and War Machine. And then WrestleMania 35, the location for WrestleMania 35 has been a hot topic over the last couple of weeks. There's been a ton of rumors about where that show will be hosted. Probably find out soon. It's usually around the Royal Rumble, if I remember correctly, that they announce the following year's WrestleMania. So we'll give you some predictions and thoughts on where we would like to see WrestleMania 35 end up. All that's coming up on the VIP after show. We're going to go over to that in just a second. So if you're a VIP member, we'll talk to you over there. Andrew, anything else you want to add before we wrap up here on the live cast?
No, I'll just quickly plug. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Andrew Socek, Souck. Otherwise, check out pwpodcast.com. Wade plugged it earlier in the night. I'm an editor over there. Just tons of podcast reviews from the biggest shows out there. So check that out.
You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. That'll do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch live cast post Thursday, our post Impact show here on a Thursday night. Andrew and I will talk to you again next Thursday at 10 p.m. If you're a VIP member, though, Andrew and I will talk to you in just a couple of minutes on the VIP after show. Thank you again for listening to this week's live cast, and Andrew and I will talk to you next week as soon as Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s, but you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The every single day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is live.